It's the True Faith Podcast. It's the very first podcast of the season 2018-19. It sounds so strange to say that, but here we are. The Newcastle United first team are back in training, or at least back at Darsley Park this week. Rafa Benitez, as we've found out through his brand new Instagram account, to follow very soon. So he is coming back. One of the major fears of last season is that he would walk out in the club, and that clearly hasn't happened. So we're going to talk to you today. And by we, I mean myself, Alex Hurst, Adam Windritten, back for the new season, and debutant on the free podcast, Rob Clothier. Welcome, lads.
Thank you. All right.
This podcast is sponsored by you lads and lasses, the listeners who sponsor us on Patreon for £5 a month. You get, like, I would say 2 to 4 extra shows, but these days it's more like 16. I just seem to be putting out shows like every day, all day. Loads of extra shows.
He's a maniac.
Yeah. We'll talk about that later. More on that later when Adam talks about one of the shows he did last night, which is essential listening, in my view, for all Newcastle United fans. So we're going to speak to you good people today about basically where we are as a football club going into the new season, and that's from the club's perspective, potentially the manager's perspective, and also us three and the listening fan base's perspective. What constitutes a successful season? Where does the fan base stand? How do we see the transfers going? And how do we see the start of the season going after we've been handed once again by the not-so-random fixture generator a very difficult start to the Premier League season? Yeah. So that's about it for today. We might have a couple of other things, but Rob, debutant, I'm going to start with you. Can you tell me right now, July the 5th or whatever we are, and it's not like this has been recorded and we can go back to it in months to come, what constitutes a good season for Newcastle United?
A good season for Newcastle United would be, for me, looking at strengthening the squad this summer, and in terms of in the Premier League, I would say above probably 12th position for me. I don't know whether you guys would agree on that.
Yeah, I think the idea that because we got 10th position at the end of last season, that we should be looking at 9th, 8th, 7th this season, I think is foolishness, given the circumstances, this dystopia that we live under in Ashley's regime. I probably go as far as agreeing with Rob with respect to a mid-table finish. But I think success beyond that is more about Rafa Benitez being able to get closer to the system that he wants to play with the personnel that are going to suit that. And I think that's going to be a theme, and it's going to explain a lot in terms of recruitment this summer. We'll surely get onto a lot of that, and you can hear a lot of rationale in the transfers pod that myself and Bolland did last night on the Patreon subscription. But I think the theme will be, people might not understand why we get rid of some players and bring others in, but you've got to know that Rafa is working towards a system that he wants to implement to a preferred style of play. We got by last season. Rafa will not want to get by this season. As much as we really, you know, we scraped a lot of fixtures and a lot of results, and we failed in a lot. He will not want the same thing to happen again. He will want more consistency. He will want us to be harder to beat. And I think what he saw in the last few months of the season, you will want to build upon that, because he seemed to finally find that formula that he thought worked, and it ultimately was the key to our survival. But recruitment will centre around Rafa Benitez's system, how he would like to play, but people might be a bit scared at first with who might actually go out the door. I think it's a sense of having a lot of faith in a manager who knows a hell of a lot about this industry.
From my perspective, it's not so much about what I think or what we think. It's just the fascination that we're probably the only club in the league where you've got three different levels of expectation or what constitutes a good season. I imagine that the football club would like to stay in the Premier League and the manager to sign a new contract, and much more than that is probably not that relevant to them. Listen, they are what they are. They still want to finish as high as possible for a number of reasons. They still want the, you know, as a football club, like Charney Mike, actually still want the club to do well. But if you were to give them now 15th, not too many scrapes with the relegation zone, pretty comfortable season, don't do anything in the cups, and Rafa Benitez stays, I reckon they'd bite your hand off at that. Whereas as fans, we'll probably think, well, we'll be delighted that Rafa stays, but can I be bothered with another season of kind of lower Premier League mediocrity? yes, but not really. That's not what going to a new season football fans should be hoping for. Then you've got the fans, and like you lads have just said, you're not necessarily expecting us to challenge the top 10, but you know, you mentioned 12th place. It would be nice to be kind of like that traditional mid-table, which used to exist before the Premier League relegation battle was like 12 teams for much of the season before teams pull away. You look at Everton, for example, and Allardyce in March, people were talking about them being dragged into a relegation battle when they lost 6 games in a row and ended up finishing 9th. I think it would be nice to be part of that kind of traditional mid-table if it does indeed exist, where we're just not even thinking about relegation past October, because the start of the season, anything can happen. It's really those autumn, winter months when the table's shaped. And then you've got the manager, like you correctly said, Adam, who probably does want to finish in those 7th, 8th, 9th, 10th positions or higher, because he sees that as a regression. He sees that moving more closely to where he wants to be. And there's no way he will sign a new contract if Newcastle have no prospect of being a top 6 side in the duration of his contract, say he signs another 3-year deal. So I think you've got 3 different areas of expectation. Whilst they all want the same thing, I'm sure Rafa wants to be able to stay, the club want him to stay, we want him to stay, and we all want to finish as high as possible. I think every other club in the Premier League, unless you can name one, maybe Everton, everyone in those clubs is pulling the same direction. And I think you've got like 3 different demographics, maybe. And obviously the fan base, to say the fans want this, is such a broad brush to paint a lot of people. You've got your idiots who think we should be top 4, that Rafa doesn't do a good job. Extreme minority that they are, they do exist. And then you've got your people who are, you know, 17th would be good again because we're getting rid of this player and whatever. So I'll just open that up to you, lads. Would you agree? Would you think that we're kind of a unique club in that respect in the Premier League, that we've got these 3 different areas like kind of totally detached from each other?
I would say not. I think it's possibly us being in a bubble slightly. I think there's, given how the last 2 seasons have gone, there have been a lot of clubs, like you say, that have been in that bottom half of the table, you know, not many points between, say, 8th and 17th, or even down to 20th. So I think there'll be a few clubs, you know, like, you know, think about Southampton fans. What do they think success will be? They scraped survival, but are they really expecting to be in 8th? Some of them might think that because they finished 8th a couple of seasons ago. But then others might think, well, come on, look where we've just been. We've got to be in stage, we've got to be realistic. So I think there are other couple of sort of, I guess, bigger, more established clubs. It's difficult to say Newcastle being established. We like to think so, but obviously we have been down in the second tier a couple of times, so we've got to be slightly more aware of where we've come from. But on the whole, in terms of Premier League history, we are a much more established club in the Premier League than, say, Burnley, even though they did finish 7th. What do Burnley fans think that success is going to look like for them? They can't possibly think that they're going to have exactly the same season they've just had, because that kind of model will not work in the Premier League. Teams will settle, people get found out, and they'll find their equilibrium. So I don't think we're the only club who will have different levels of expectation. I think a lot of clubs in the Premier League are going to have split opinions from fan bases.
And that's fine from fan bases. My comment about Newcastle is that the ownership is so far removed from the expectations and demands of fans and the manager. So, for example, if Mark Hughes was to finish 17th again, he'd get sacked. I don't doubt it. Whereas if Rafa Benitez was to finish 17th, he wouldn't get sacked. Now, he might walk away, which is the different thing. Mark Hughes isn't going to walk away from his £2 million a year job. So that's why Newcastle, for me, and, you know, Burnley's a good point, but Burnley have got Europe. But, you know, Burnley, and I think a lot of Burnley fans will not be expecting a relegation battle. And I agree with you, and I think they might well be in one. But I just think that Newcastle are unique for that reason in terms of the demands. Normally the demand, look at Southampton's a good example, actually, so I'm pleased you raised it. Look at them getting rid of Claude Puel, finishing 8th, cup final. That's almost like it's ridiculous and in a sense admirable, because the people running that club, foolish as they were, demanded better, you know, because it was the 8th on 46 points. They didn't score 6 home games in a row and all that kind of stuff. So that makes sense. But I still think that we are unique as a football club in terms of the difference in opinion about what constitutes a successful season while we sit here in July. Season ticket deadline has been extended several times. The clubs say that's due to administrative reasons and technological reasons. There was a flurry of transfer speculation yesterday or the day before, and it just seems like we're set up for another one of those summers in terms of transfer speculation. Now, I also think we're unique as a Premier League club because we are probably, I'm pretty certain here, we'll be the only club that will not allow director investment from the director, the main shareholder, or borrow funds based against future Premier League TV income. Kieran Maguire, the price of football, noted yesterday, the day before, that Man City had taken out a big loan and either paid it off or taken out another one, secured against Premier League television rights incoming. But we won't do that. So we're in like a unique financial position as a football club going into the 17-18-19 season. And I suppose, yeah, what, we're 10 minutes into the podcast now. We're still kind of in the introduction part of it. But you know, you lads have just kind of said what you consider success. What do you think the club considers success? Is a million miles from what you lads have just said?
I think you go back to when we were almost relegated on the final day against West Ham, and Mike Ashley came out, didn't he? And he said he was going to stay until he'd won something, which also included finishing top four for the Champions League. So, I mean, I still find it hard to believe that, though, to be honest, that is actually his ambition. I just don't see it as being reality, to be honest. I think he came out and said that just to get the fans back on side at the time. I think probably they see success would be probably maybe pushing to get in maybe the Europa League or at least the top eight of the Premier League. Again, like you say, it's a very different. I agree with Alex. I think there's different outlooks on what is successful at the club from fans, the board, and probably Rafa as well. I don't know what you think.
I mean, it's now dawning on me that a takeover is not going to happen this summer. I think we'd all put that in our back pocket around February, March to say, right, well, once Premier League survival is secure, Consortia will come back in with a bid, will stavely, you know, prove a medal. That's gone completely quiet. I probably don't expect that to come back. I think Ashley's talk of 400 million valuation is just another one of his games. I don't think anyone can read him. I don't think anyone knows what's going on. But I agree with you, Alex. I think it's going to be definitely another one of those summers. Very frustrating. However, I do think there'll be enough sales revenue generated for Rafa to steer the team towards this system that he would prefer to play. And we do have a reasonable amount of saleable assets that I don't think we had that last summer. So I think there's opportunity there. And if you think that, you know, Mourinho is all but done. He'll be away this weekend, according to all the big media outlets. Mitrovic seems to have been pretty much done as well. I reckon it's just all about trying to probably eke a couple of extra million out of Fulham, because Mitrovic wants to go there. We know that Fulham want him. So I think, you know, out of those two players who actually didn't feature at all during our very good run, to get upwards of 30 million, which we know that Rafa can be, you know, he's as I keep mentioning, I mentioned on the transfers show yesterday, he will look for bargains, he will look for release clauses, he will look for loans, he will look for free transfers. He's very savvy in the market. He has a lot of contacts. He will be made aware of a lot of players' situations, which will dictate his preferred transfer targets list, however long or unrealistic that may be. But, you know, that's just 30 million from nowhere that doesn't affect the team that we were playing. Yeah. So that's a positive spin on things. Do we wish we weren't in this situation, that we were, that, you know, this is the difficult thing, because we know everybody knows the TV money comes in, yet we'd be playing it as if we don't have that money, which just doesn't work, because everybody has that money. We're just opting not to spend it or not to be released. It's tricky. I know there's some people, I know Chris Holt is very optimistic about how much we will actually spend this summer. I think his figure is about 70 million, he reckons. Maybe that could happen through the player sales, but I don't think Rafa will get any more than sort of 35, 40 million from the club anyway. Like, we can't just rely on player sales to get players in, because if Ashley, we say that there's no logic to Ashley's strategy at all. If he knew anything about football, he would invest, because he knows that that 10th position is not going to happen again. It was miraculous. We lucked out, and we only finished in the top half on goal difference in the end. Finishing 13th, 14th, you know, is pretty much the same situation, but it has a much, you know, more cautious outlook on things. I honestly don't know what's going to happen. I don't understand what success is to Mike Ashley. It doesn't. Nothing he does makes any sense, and I think it's going to be a long 5 weeks, and we haven't got that much time. In the same time, it's going to be long, but it's going to go over so quickly. It's going to be arduous. The sagas are going to come out. The fake news stories that Keith Bishop might be planting everywhere, that, you know, because of season ticket sales. It's a joke, man, and it's gonna be very annoying for the lot of us, I think.
A few things I want to pick you both up on. Rob, you talked about Mike Ashley, fourth position. Doesn't seem realistic. I think Mike Ashley literally makes it up as he goes along. The interview with Lee Charnley, interview, press release, whatever you want to call it, with some of the Nationals, the local lads who work for the Nationals, where he said that beating Spurs 5-1 basically transformed Ashley's thinking into a Sutherland-esque cost-cutting measure to keep Rafa Benitez, and saying what Rafa wants, what Rafa gets, and running the club at a loss and him putting more money in. That's scary to think that, you know, those decisions are made on whims. And I think the elation of beating West Ham and avoiding relegation and having gambled on John Carver and got away with it and not spent any money for 2.5 transfer windows, whatever it was, that was just him in the moment, almost like a kid, or like a, you know, an excitable adult. So I wouldn't attach too much to, not that I'm saying you are, but I'm just generally, no, I honestly think that if you gave him that time again, he wouldn't have made that statement.
He's devoid of strategy. He Nothing he says makes any sense. It, like you say, it's whimsical. Yeah. And that how can anybody, especially somebody like Rafa Benitez, plan any sort of team or future or career around working for somebody like that? It is... Talk about the England manager job being the impossible. This is the impossible job.
And Adam, you know, you talked about club not spending the money and we won't spend it. I don't think it's a case of not spending it. It's not spending it before it comes, and that's what all the other clubs. You look at Cardiff now. They don't have, if they've paid 80-90 million quid as reported for some player, and they played 15 million for Josh Murphy, they don't have that money in the bank. Either they're loaning it, like a soft loan, because very short term loan. Bank's going to make some easy money, or a finance company, or the owner is going to put that money down to create some space. Newcastle have spent all of their money since 14-15. Literally, there's no money in the bank. There's no money payments to Mike Ashley. That money that has come in from whatever source has gone back out, wages, players, agents, administrative costs. So I'm not accusing anyone of Newcastle of not spending the club's money on footballers, because they clearly have. The big issue that we have now that we should have some money, like you correctly say, is we ran at a massive loss last year. Are those loans going to be paid back to Mike Ashley? Because whenever a director makes a loan into a company, that said in the last financial accounts, that was to be paid back next year. Now, of course, he can take action to defer that he could convert it into equity if he so liked, but he has refused to do that so far, so the club still owe him a massive debt. If we don't pay Mike Ashley any money back, there should be money to spend right now, a significant chunk. And you've seen today baffling, really strange things in papers about, you know, final turning down, you know, 18 million for Jorgensen from Newcastle. Well, at the time, we were led to believe we literally had no money. That's why we had to buy loan players. So unless Feyenoord were literally willing to take it all in installments in a year's time or 6 months' time, I just find those arguments bizarre. But it's important, and I wrote this in my article last week, it's important for us to pick our battles with the clubs, because too many people want to hammer them at every single thing that they do. And they get a lot of things right. I'm not talking about Mike Ashley here. I'm talking about Mike Ashley did get the approach to the championship right for 6 months. And then for some switch in his head clicked, and we went back to no money in January, no investment, no loans, only loans to cover literally keeping the lights on, essentially. And, you know, there are a lot of positive things going on at the football club. So I don't want to be one of those people that just hammers them for everything they do. And they do spend all of their money. You know, on footballers. There isn't money. You know, 13, 14, 12, 13, those seasons, there was money in the bank and we didn't spend it.
But your argument falls down, as you well know, that the fact that, yes, we might not have any money in the bank, but don't own a fucking football club if you can't afford to run it. Don't buy a Ferrari and stick unleaded in. Do you know what I mean? It's insanity. Like, this situation is of his own doing and he can easily get himself out of it, but he chooses not to. I don't want us to glorify him with he runs the club well, he doesn't spend money he doesn't have. That's, in my eyes, that is not a good thing. That hasn't been a good thing for many years. Yes, be cautious, but don't... There's being cautious and there's being Mike Ashley, and they're two very, very different things. He's heartless, he doesn't care, and as a fan base, as a club, and a manager, we deserve a lot better. It really, really irritates me, and we shouldn't have to put up with it. If he doesn't like it, if he doesn't want to spend money, the idea that we are in his debt because, you know, we owe him 129 million or whatever it is, like anybody else coming into the club who wants to own the club, and I fully believe that there have been people out there who could have come in had Mike Ashley been a willing seller. I'm not just saying Staveley, there probably have been other, but it'll stop at the first hurdle the minute he starts playing silly buggers with negotiations and changing the goalposts and just making it up as he goes along. He plays games, and for the duration that he will still be at Newcastle United, he will continue to play games, and we're all at his you know, beck and call of Ashley and what he decides to do at any one particular moment.
And I'm not arguing for a second that any of those things you've accused me of arguing.
No, sorry, yeah, I'm like, just...
So yeah. it's just in trying to understand what's going on in Newcastle, you have to take things into consideration, which we all do, and the club spend this money. Doesn't mean it's right, doesn't mean that Newcastle is the only club in the Premier League who won't borrow money. I mean, forget about fucking Mike Ashley not putting his money in or being ambitious. Let the club borrow some money for a few months to buy some footballers to keep winning the Premier League like last summer, etc., etc., etc. Back to this point of this podcast and where we are going in the new season, it's very much a case to me of... I'm the football club, I'm Mike Ashley or Lee Charnley or whoever, or Justin, whatever his name is, Barnes, and who seems to have gone off the radar. And I'm thinking, you know, your 12th sounds really, really appealing. Away from the relegation battle sounds really appealing. Cup runs, who gives a fuck? Nice. As long as it doesn't affect the Premier League form, as long as he changes a few players in the early rounds, nice. What I'm going to put to you now, put this to you, Rob, is when do the fan base start to turn? And it's like, let's be honest, because we're all big Newcastle fans, we all think Newcastle fans are great and we're unique and all this and that, but in the past, last season, we beat Stoke 2-1 and Stoke are shit, but we beat them 2-1 and we play well and we should have won by loads more, and me and the lads would go out into town for an unplanned night out because we're so happy that we've won at home in the Premier League against Stoke, who are shit. Mm-hmm. That doesn't happen season after season. So you've got Newcastle who are beating Chelsea 3-0, final day of last season. You've got Arsenal, you've got Man United, you've got those wins. Do you think that the fan base would be comfortable with a very mundane 12th place finish this season? You take a couple of batterings, you go to Man City, you take a run behind the ball, you get done 3-0, you move on. We're positive on the podcast because that's what we do. Is that going to be enough for a lot of people? Do you think people are not going to, particularly with the manager not signing a new contract, by the way? I think if he signed a new contract, people might buy into it a little bit more. But where do you see the fan base going this season and stuff like that?
I think, as you sort of alluded to earlier, we've got a lot of fans who do seem to think that we're entitled to Champions League football. It's a very small minority, isn't it, to be honest? But I think, I mean, if we had a season where we just ticked along, picked up a few wins, a bit similar to last season, I don't think people would be too disappointed, to be honest. As long as, I think at the minute, I think what the fan base want to see is Rafa being supported by the club, and it's almost like what happens on the pitch happens. I want Rafa to get his new contract signed, so that we can look forward. Going back to Ashley, you know, his lack of investment, does that just prove that he doesn't want to be here long term? He's not prepared to put that money in. He's not prepared, like you were saying, take loans to, like other clubs would do, to buy players and then pay it later. He just wants to deal with the here and now almost. I think, going back to your original question, I think if we were to have a similar season to last season, and don't forget as well, when I say a 12th place finish, that's still pretty much in a relegation battle from last season, because the bottom half of the table was the relegation battle, wasn't it, really? The bottom half, I mean, all the way up to, what, 10th, probably? 11th, 12th? So, I think so long as we're not struggling down, again, flirting with relegation, even if it was just, like you said, a classic sort of mid-table finish, I don't think that would be too unwelcome by the fans, to be honest.
I think that has to be represent. That would have to represent progress. We flirted with relegation far longer than we really should have done last season, and we only got out of it towards those last couple of months between sort of like it was March and April kind of time, wasn't it? Around the times we played Huddersfield and Southampton back to back. That was the kind of turning point, and that was the moment that we essentially secured survival. But if we can kind of, like you say, have a similar season but secure that survival a lot earlier, maybe, like, obviously not secure, it's never going to be mathematically, but, you know, if you get a feeling that you feel a lot more secure around February
you just want some of the anxiety taken away a bit earlier in the season.
That's it.
Do you know what I mean? You want to be able to look forward and think, all right, it's January, February, and we're kind of 10th, 11th, 12th, and there's a bit of a gap down to, you know, maybe 8, 9, 10 points down to 17th.
You know what, I just want to potentially disagree, because I want you to be right. But I remember under Pardew when we were 10th in January and we didn't spend any money in January, and then the rest of the season was almost a write-off and people talked about being bored. A lot of people didn't go to matches. Same when they sacked. No, when sorry, not sacked. When Pardew left and Carver came in, obviously both seasons had a massive dip in form. But there was a lack of interest. I just worry. Last season, replace the wins against Man United, like Arsenal and Southampton, with wins over West Brom, Watford and Bournemouth at home, I think that the season isn't remembered as fondly. No one loves Matt Ritchie as much. People would still love Matt Ritchie, but he scored that goal. And a lot of the debate you've seen around Matt Ritchie, you know, even Mark Douglas talked about it when he was tweeting about it today, saying Matt Ritchie should stay if he goes. He's a massive dressing room. And he scored that goal last season, because that goal was so important last season. Newcastle lose that game and go to Bournemouth the next week. We might have got relegated. Who knows? Probably not, but because we're still had a good team with good players. But I'm just worried this season might be what you say, and that we'll get to January in 12th place. And I've just looked at the 2000-2001 season. There's your definition of mid-table mediocrity. Newcastle, 11th place, 51 points, which probably enough for Europe these days.
Yeah.
But there was no danger at all of relegation. And I was very, you lads were broadly the same age. You know, at the time, I remember people being pissed off then, and I'm kind of worried that with the manager not signing a new contract, that the season might fizzle out in a way it didn't last season.
I'm going to disagree with you slightly on the fact that I think the interest waned with Pardew and Carver in charge for very, very obvious reasons. They were con men. They were shysters. They didn't know what they were doing. There was roll the dice tactics. The impact that Rafa Benitez has had, I think, will always ensure that as long as he's sat in that dugout, there'll be flag displays. There'll be 52,000 people out their seats, chanting for him, serenading him, and the buzz around Newcastle United will still exist as long as he is there and he is at the helm. And that's why I think it would be different. And, you know, you could argue, oh, well, it's just another, you know, it's a 10th place that, you know, Pardew finished. Well, it's not. I think a lot of people appreciate just how difficult these circumstances are. We've seen it for years. Rafa has brought the buzz back. He's added magic back. I don't think that just disappears, even if we are sort of just, you know, stumbling around mid-table. I still think the very fact that he's there means that it is going to be exciting. I think the players that he will bring in, and he will bring in players. We won't bring in no players. We will bring in some players. Whoever they may be, that's up for debate as well. Are they good enough? That's up for debate as well. But I think the players that he is allowed to bring in will still improve us, in the sense that it will be better for Rafa and better for, again, I keep harking on, how he wants to play. And I think that in itself will mean that we play a more exciting brand of football as well. We spent the last season without possession, playing fast counter-attack. Rafa absolutely wants to control games more. He wants us to have possession. Currently, we don't have the players that are able to be comfortable on the ball. Key is a player who can change that. And I think anybody else coming in, I think one of the criteria, and it might be kind of like a money ball thing, he'll be looking for players who have good pass completion rates, that are comfortable on the ball, that won't get panicked, have the composure, and we can start passing around a bit. And actually, I think to watch that, as much as we do know our counter-attack game, and it worked for us when we finally realised how to use it, we learned to be very defensively solid as well, certainly the second half of the season after that awful run. But I think the players that he's looking to bring in and the reasons why means that the style of play will be more attractive, I think, and people will get on board with it and will probably get more confidence simply by just having more of the ball. And I think that's what he's trying to work towards. So I think as much as it might not be too different in terms of the amount of points and results that we get, and maybe we won't get as many scalps this season of the bigger clubs, I still think, regardless of whether he signed his contract or not, which will always obviously be a point of to be wary about, it'll be a cloud over our heads until he does sign it or we know what his future is. But as long as he's there playing the way that he wants to play, there'll be excitement and it'll be really, really good to watch, I think.
Interesting you mentioned the possession thing. Me and Norman on the, for patrons, the extra shows that they get for £5 a month, we're halfway through a game-by-game review of last season where we'll talk through every single fixture from last season and any recurring themes, tactical trends, fan reactions. And you had to go quite a long way to find a game that Newcastle won having more of the ball. I might even want to say Huddersfield at home, where, you know, which is mental. Any game where we had more of the ball, we really, really struggled for a long time. But
overall, we were third lowest in the entire Premier League for possession.
Yeah.
Third lowest.
That's not Rafa Benitez, is it?
Not at all.
That brings me nicely, Adam, thanks, to the next part, which I want to talk about in terms of the start of the season. You had last season started badly, then it got much better, then it got drastically worse for a long time, and then it got like insanely better, dipped, and then finished well. What kind of Newcastle United goes into that new season? Is it the Newcastle United of 6 best form since Christmas? Or do you have to look at the season as a whole and think, you know what, we were the best, the 10th best team in the Premier League because we finished there. We came in from the Championship with not a load of momentum because we kind of got ourselves over the line. It was difficult. We lost a few games, dropped a few points we didn't have to. And that seemed to come into the new season compared to Huddersfield, compared to Brighton, who started fantastically, both picking up crucial points. Huddersfield, practically their first 4 games, kept them in the Premier League. How do you see our start of the season now? It's a difficult question because you've got new players, you've got tactics changing. Are we going to maintain that positive performance level, which we had since, what, January, February, yeah, in the Premier League into the new season, or is it literally start again?
I think it's going to be a bit of both because the players who have been this season, who are still going to be in the team, will have that momentum from last season. The new players who come in, we'll obviously do. They'll know like how we finished last season, strong finish the season. So they'll hopefully buy into that as well. And like you say, if he does bring in a lot of new players for the starting 11, they're going to have time to gel in. Pre-season is going to be very important. You know, they keep talking about getting players in before the pre-season begins. It's important to get players.
Well,
to
fuck that up.
Well, yes.
Started now.
it has the back training. We've got Key and, well, obviously Dubravka's already been with us since January. So,
yeah, good point though. You're right. That was explicitly stated by the manager. That's what he wanted.
I know. But it's just another example, isn't it, of something that Rafa wants and doesn't get. And quite honestly, how he puts up with it, I don't know. But I admire him for it, and that's one of the reasons I love him so much. I think. We're going to have to wait and see how any new players that we get gel into the team. I would like to see them hit the ground running. I'd like Shelvey not to get sent off in the first game. We should have had a point off Spurs in the opening, at least a point off Spurs in that opening game last season. We matched them up until that point.
Oh, we're better in the away game, in my opinion.
Yes. I think, again, you've both sort of alluded to it as well, the fact that if we can turn some of those niggly 1-0 daft defeats to Burnley, Brighton, Huddersfield, etc. You know, if we can turn some of them, even just in the draws, or if we can nick the win out of them and still get some good results off the Man Uniteds, the Chelsea's, Arsenal's, then there's no reason why we shouldn't again be looking to finish in the top half.
I think for that opener against Spurs, I think we have a really, really good chance. I want to be optimistic about this. I think a lot of Spurs will have played in the World Cup. They'll be jaded.
The World Cup final?
Potentially, yes. as we all know...
Denmark have gone out.
As we all know, Harry Kane doesn't score in August. So that's just absolute fact. So that's fine. We don't have to worry about Harry Kane. Dele Alli's just pretty much been injured for the entirety of the World Cup. So, you know, hopefully he's still hobbling later. But you know, I think Rafa will know, and this is it, he will know what his strongest 11 is to an extent. It obviously will massively depend on who we bring in and how that changes. But actually, I think I think this summer is going to be a lot more about squad depth and options. Yes, we need to bring in a couple of key first team players. We'll see how they play out. If we were to bring in somebody like Andros Townsend, for example, at least if that happened, he could probably integrate quite quickly. He knows the club, he knows the manager, and he probably knows what's going to be expected of him as well. So I think in terms of the style of play, I know I mentioned the possession thing. I don't think we'll do that against Spurs per se. I think we'll kind of try and play the same way. But I think I do fancy us in that opening day of the season. I think what we all know about the opening day of the season, it's always sunny. It's always sunny. Had it not been for that daft Shelvey step on his little finger, which really puts the Neymar thing into perspective. Yeah. And then I think we'll be a lot more assured about what we're doing as a team. We'll have gelled more. And I just think we'll be fitter because we've had nobody at the World Cup beyond Mitrovic is on his way out anyway. So key as well. But yeah. I think I do fancy us for the start of the season. I think it will give us a good springboard going into those first few fixtures. We should have no fear. People have seen how defensively solid we were. We just need to build on that. And I fancy us at home. I really do.
I really thought that game against Chelsea, albeit the opposition wasn't its most motivated, though still a very strong team out, I think that's close to how I think Rafa Benitez wants us to play. That wasn't a backs to the wall. I've just checked the stats. They had 58% possession, but still we had 16 shots to their 6. You know, that was a kind of shots were in and from all angles. Your two wingers were very high up the pitch, were pushed high. I think that's how he wants us to play, to press, not maybe have the ball, but certainly this stage of our footballing season, as it were. And I think that might be similar. If we play the same way against Spurs, I really could see us causing Spurs some problems. Spurs can cause us some problems because they've got very good players. And you saw against that Chelsea game, second half, Chelsea had quite a few chances where normally when we play teams, you know, the likes of Arsenal, we didn't allow them a chance essentially in the second half. Man United, until the last couple of minutes or the last 10 minutes, didn't really force much after going 1-0 down. But, Adam?
I was just going to say, there's something that... I was doing a bit of research for an article. Rafa Benitez's preferred style. I mean, this is when he's back as Napoli manager. He was sort of asked about Barcelona's tiki-taka style and possession and how important is possession. He's like, well, obviously it is possession, but it needs to be a balance between possession and effectiveness. And I think that notion was proven last season because, as we've talked about on this in this conversation here, we very rarely had the lion's share of possession. However, in terms of chances created, shots on goal, we're probably about 11th, 12th in the league rather than, you know, possession, we're about 18th. I think it's away we were 19th, for example. But it's this effectiveness. We don't have much of the ball, but when we do have it, we do make things happen, which probably surprised quite a lot of people. Even during that awful run, we were still creating chances. We just didn't seem to get the rubber... You know, any of the luck, say against Bournemouth or against Everton, the very winnable games that even that Burnley one. You know, you just think that we were the better team, but it just didn't happen for us, and that'll happen again. And there's nothing to say that we won't have another awful run next season, because realistically speaking, our squad will still be relatively poorer than a lot of the other clubs out there who might have spent. But what we'll have a world-class tactician rallying his troops, drilling them, and I think that counts for that's worth a £30 million player in your starting lineup. I think it counts for a lot. But it's this idea of effectiveness which we saw last season, and I think will only improve next season. He's all about marginal gains, Rafa Benitez. He's forever the perfectionist. He won't get it perfect next season again. It just will not happen. Even if he had all the resources in the world, he wouldn't get it perfect. But there's very few people out there that could achieve that. Pep Guardiola is probably the one closest to doing that. 100 Premier League points, never been done before. It's incredible.
£600 million spent.
Of course. No, absolutely. Absolutely. But there's been plenty of other managers who have spent that much money and got it wrong. Pep Guardiola went out and bought players that he knew would fit his system. He bought pacey fullbacks because that's how he wanted to play. And to a much lesser extent, the same ideals will exist with Rafa Benitez. He will look for those players that will fit his system. They might not be the best targets or the most expensive targets, but every player that he brings in will have a purpose.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think with Rafa playing, like we were saying just then, or you guys were saying, Rafa's the way he's having to play with less possession isn't the way he's used to setting his teams up. And he's still finished 10th in the Premier League. If he can eventually get Newcastle to a place where we're not maybe not dominating games, but if we have near it a 50% possession, then who knows how much the results will improve with that.
Definitely, and I think really interesting will be the comparison between the two lineups. Same game, opening day, same opposition. And while I think Spurs will be almost identical, because they've got their big players, they're kind of settled as a team. They might add one or two. I don't think Sissoko will be playing, but time will tell. But if you look at Newcastle, it's like already going into this game, we're already in a better position, which, you know, Lee Charnley doesn't listen to this podcast, but Lee, if you're listening, just ignore me and buy some players. But if you think about it, we've got Dubravka, massive upgrade to Rob Elliott and goal that day. We're going to have Paul Dummett for the whole game, who had to go off, and what Manquillo came on.
We'll have Lejeune for the whole game.
Lejeune for the whole game. We'll have Lascelles for the whole game.
We'll have Shelvey not getting sent off because I believe in him.
We'll have no Isaac Hayden. We'll have hopefully the same Diomi that we saw last season. So already that Newcastle team, which did so well against that Spurs team, is in quite good shape. And if, like as you say, if you can add an Andros Townsend, who, by the way, if we don't sign him, I never want to hear his name again. Like, three transfer windows. In fact, when he comes to James's Park, I want him to play with no name and number on his back. Just out of respect for the fans who've had to fucking listen to his name, like, bandied about in transfer stories for three transfer windows in a row, and he doesn't come. If he doesn't come, the football media should just resign. Like, there were thousands of words that must have been written and spoken by the likes of us. Yeah. But so I think we're going to be in a good place anyway because the team has got so much better through Benitez and through the journey they went on last season to become a good football team by the end of it. I mean, if you can add a decent, you know, another decent winger in Kennedy up there, then I'd be really confident, like you lads are. And I'm to move it on from this bit because we've gone on for 42 minutes about like one part of the show. I'm confident of a top 10 finish next season if Rafa Benitez is remotely backed. Now, like you said, Adam, the £30 million from your sales, 30 to 40, depending on who goes, maybe another £40 million, which is what was spent last season, £46 million. It wasn't net, but it was £46 million spent. If he was to get maybe like, you know, the Chris Holt £70 million figure, albeit players who won't be on massive wages, albeit maybe not number one choices, I still back the team to get much, much better. Add in your Jacob Murphy with a full preseason and stuff like that. I'm confident that we'll have 5 weeks to reassess these views as things twist and turn. We'll have both of you lads in Portugal with Norman reporting for the True Faith podcast for the Porto game. So we're all looking forward to that for patrons. And
looking forward to seeing Mbemba play.
Yes. Hopefully badly.
And just, Adam, do you want to give listeners a quick plug for the transfer show you did with Bonin last night? Kind of tell the listeners what it's all about and how they can access it.
Yeah, me and Bonant went through all the transfer rumours from this week. Lots of them very fanciful, as you can imagine, because of the nature of the season ticket renewal day. Lots of stories planted, but we talked through them all anyway. There'll obviously be a lot of agents giving a bit of bluster, but the sale of Matt Ritchie was one of the main topics of our podcast. What do you, as listeners, think? Would you like to see him go? Do you understand why Rafa might want to let him go? Who would you like to see come in his place? Would Townsend be a suitable replacement for Matt Ritchie? Do you think we're going to get Kennedy? Will he come in on loan? Will he come in? Will we actually pay up front for him? I mean, what, you know, there's a lot of rumours going around and there are going to be wholesale changes. We know that Rafa Benitez is brutal when he wants to be with a club. So check out the transfers podcast. It's exclusive to Patreon subscribers only. It's £5 a month. It's pretty much the price of a pint a month. So much content all through this summer and plenty more once the season gets started as well. You'll be looking at four shows a week guaranteed. Exclusive Newcastle content. You look at all the national podcasts that skirt over a Newcastle result. You'll get in-depth with us, in-depth NUFC content. And it's an absolute must listen. Get involved with Patreon, fiver a month. It's absolutely nout. What else are you going to spend it on?
Lovely stuff. Rob, apart from today, through a brand new social media platform, we haven't really heard from Rafa. And I would advise everyone this to
Rafa and his dogs.
Instagram, which I'm going to go for. It's one of his daughters. Like there, as I said, come on, Dad. We'll take some snaps of you out and about over the summer. Get them online. Get a few thousand likes. Boost the ego. But yeah, last summer was very much, despite the similar lack of transfer activity. So we're no further ahead this summer than we were last summer. We'd signed a player who we hadn't known already for less money this summer than last summer. Yeah. Dubravka to Watu. We brought in a free transfer. Yet last summer, Rafa was never out of the local press with the local press lads reporting how unhappy he was. Why is it so different this summer? Is he happier or is it different tactics from the manager?
I would like to think the reason that is genuinely that he's had some time off, because we all know how much effort he puts in, 110% constantly. I mean, you know, even at home, he must do nothing but watch football and research stats, watch clips of players. I think we'd all, nobody would begrudge Rafa a week off work. He's worked tirelessly for this club, and I genuinely hope that the reason why we haven't heard from him is because he's been relaxing and had some time off. And I think now that obviously the players are back training, he'll be looking to get a few statements out there, do a few interviews, what have you. I'm sure we'll be seeing a few things from him over the next few weeks. Clearly, he's going to be doing interviews before the pre-season friendlies. Whether there's any sort of interviews at the training ground, that sort of thing. Hopefully, when we're signing players, we'll be hearing from him. I say when we sign players. I would like to be hearing from him, his thoughts on it. I don't know of any particular reason why we haven't heard from him, but that would be the reason why I would like to think it is.
We can obviously read a lot into the fact that he might not have said anything in the press simply because, I mean, if there wasn't this contract question mark hanging over the club, then him not saying anything in the media for a couple of weeks is... It's pretty innocuous, really. It's not really a story, but I think it's partly the holiday, but that we know that he probably hasn't really gone on holiday. You'll still have set up the Sabutio in his in his holiday home and whatever. Like
a bloke who, according to his Instagram post today, seems to have gone to the beach in a suit.
Honestly,
these kind of people take holidays. I don't know.
Everybody needs to get on. I think it's Rafa Benitez RB on Instagram. The early signs are this is going to be a sensational Instagram account and not to be missed. So as much as you need to get on board with Patreon, get on board Rafa Benitez on Instagram. I can't do a better plug than that. But I also think that some of the silence has been Rafa just keeping his cards close to his chest, seeing how it plays out, seeing what Charnley has to say. As he reports back from Mike Ashley, I'm sure that Mike Ashley and Rafa Benitez are not in communication. I think he'll be just keeping his powder dry, because I think if he comes out in the media, he's just going to be asked the inevitable questions. Are you signing a new contract? How much is your transfer budget? Maybe just wants to sit tight for a little bit and see how it plays out. I think I can probably... quite rightly assume that he's pissed off that we haven't brought in players before the World Cup. We all knew how short this window was. We all knew how important it was to get players in before the World Cup so he could start planning early. You can't plan a season without knowing who your personnel is going to be. So suddenly we have, what, 5 weeks or so? Maybe less now, where he still doesn't know who, he still might not know who's playing up front. He still might not know what his starting midfield is going to be, might not know who's going to be playing on the wings. Is Richie going to be here or is Richie going to be gone? Is Kennedy going to come? We don't know. That's so many important positions that haven't been confirmed that he can even start planning for. I think he could probably start planning from the back, and that's probably what he will be doing, because he probably knows what his back five are going to be, and arguably the centre midfielders as well. But I think that, you know, the forward line, the goals, and I think for me this is one of the key issues this summer, is we need goals. We need to find a better goal scorer than we've had. So I think he's been quiet. Yes, a very well-earned holiday, and I think that will be part of it, and that's probably how he'll play it PR-wise, but I think there's a lot bubbling on the background, and I think he's likely to be pretty annoyed at this point.
Well said. I'll put forward three possible reasons we haven't heard from Rafa, and I'll let listeners kind of determine their own. Number one, it did nothing last season. It didn't make any difference. So he kicked up a massive stink. We all got really worried. He probably knows that. And it didn't help. Mike Ashley didn't budge. Justin Barnes didn't budge. In fact, they probably fucked him over more, because that's the kind of people they are. Number two is that maybe he stopped caring. That's worrying. I don't want to really entertain it, but maybe he's thought, well, it's not worth me time because I've got one more year in my contract. I'll do my best. But I tried and it didn't work. And number three is that he's confident in the plans for the club. He's on the same wavelength as Leitrone and Mike Ashley, and he knows that there are players coming. What would he possibly have to complain about? So
you did a really creepy Stepford Wives smile when you said that, Alex.
Time will tell. We're going to finish off the podcast by looking at the fixtures for the new season. So, I mean, let's talk quickly through pre-season, lads. You know, Rob started off. I mean, not that you can really critique Rafa's plans for pre-season, but how was that for you? Why do you think he's gone for what he's gone for?
I actually personally think it's always... I'm not a big fan of these trips out to Asia and all that sort of thing. It's got to have a negative effect on the players' sort of physicality, hasn't it? I mean, it's tiring. I like the idea of going over to Ireland again. That seemed to be a good trip last time.
He seems to be a creature of habit, doesn't he,
Rob? Yeah, definitely, very much so. Yeah, and again, what we've got a short trip to Hull. We've got Augsburg at home. And then they added that the visit to Braga on after the Porto game as well.
And I think in Porto and Braga, that's, you know, two of the top four clubs in Portugal there. That will be a proper test, I think. I think, you know, Hull City and St. Patrick's Athletic will be more about setting up tactically, ready for those games. Augsburg will be probably a bit more comfortable, especially that it's at home. And I think with Porto and Braga, I think they're the key to pre-season. It's a little bit of the first two games, just getting things set up, and how we approach those games away. It'll be a test, and you'll want it to, but, you know, Rafa never plays into this, oh, let's go on a jolly away kind of thing. He's not that kind of...
Everything's done for a genuine reason.
He's not going to be like a pardew going nightclubbing or stealing a taxi.
It's opening a sports direct in Ireland. That happened a few years ago, so I don't think that'll be happening.
No. So I think it's a mix of opposition, but, you know, Augsburg won't be sniffed at either. They'll give a relative test, but I think you'll be looking for a bit of a confidence booster there at home, in front of the crowds you get for these pre-season friendlies at St James's Park, just like a week before the season, are usually pretty decent. You'll get about 15,000-20,000 or something. It'll be a reasonable crowd for that, even more maybe, I don't know. But I think there'll be a lot of logic gone into that, I think, from Rafa Benitez.
Yeah, and I'm pleased for the fans like yourselves who will be going over. And it's like, you know, Newcastle Twitter was awash with excitement, which doesn't happen very often, when that fixture was announced. End of July, last weekend in July, schools are off. You know, enough time to book reasonably affordably. Well, it's a hard place to get to. And I think you're going to see a couple of thousand, maybe more, mags just, you know, reliving the European glory days, but without the pressure and stress. So long may it continue. And personally, for I might go to Hull. We're trying to cover every preseason game with you. We have someone from the podcast going to Ireland, so we're going to have Ireland Porto covered for you video wise, podcast wise. You've got to keep with True Faith on Patreon if you want to know what's going on in preseason with Newcastle United. Braga's fucked with, unfortunately. We'll probably not be at that one. But Hull, there are some serious demons to
exercise
there, because God, that, if you thought that penalty shootout against Colombia was hot, gut-wrenching and heart racing. I was there that night and it was cold. Oh my God, it was cold at Hull that night in the quarterfinal, and we were by mile the better team. Hull were not in the game. We took terrible penalties, like beyond terrible. Like Shelby's penalty was shit. Gale's penalty was like, it wasn't bad luck, it was just shit penalties. Gouffran, I think, is the only one who scored like a decent pen. But Christ, I'd love to do them 5 or 6 nil.
But I spent four of my formative years in Hull, went to university there, and it's a bloody good night out in Hull. It is class. It's pretty cheap as well. So if you are going down to Hull, you're in for a good night, whatever the result, I promise you.
So we'll end off the pod quickly, lads. You have to play every team twice. That's how it goes. But it seems that we have been handed, what have we been handed? What, 1, 2, 3... 4 of the top 5 in our opening 5 games. The other game being just like last season, Cardiff City, you know, the other newly promoted side away from home.
It's funny that.
I know, it's almost,
it's almost like they're in cahoots with Sky.
Exactly. And you look at where fixtures, and you've got Palace away and Leicester at home. You don't have anyone from the bottom half at home, which are your kind of 3-point bankers. The things we were very good at last season, I think, were Bournemouth and West Brom aside, were won nearly all of the games against the bottom half, which you have to do to stay in the Premier League. So, I mean, Rob, start off. Do you care? Are you worried? Do you think it's good to get these out of the way? How do you say it's good?
Well, the general consensus, I think, is that people think it's good to get these games out of the way early, isn't it? I mean, I think you can see it from both sides. A difficult start isn't necessarily a negative. The Cardiff away, you know, that game's going to be difficult as well. I can see us definitely picking up a few points, and going back to the decent results we had at the end of last season against, you know, the Chelsea, Arsenal, Man United should buoy the team to have confidence that we can at least get a point out of those games, especially the home games. So yeah, I'm not too concerned, to be honest. I think we'll still pick up some points.
As we found out last season, home to Man United, home to Arsenal, away to Leicester. Like, we won those games, yet we drew away to West Brom, bottom of the table. We lost at home and away to Watford. You cannot really call it, to be honest. I think, you know, Spurs at home, Chelsea at home, Arsenal at home, they're teams that in the last couple of Premier League seasons we've played, yes, before relegation as well, that we've won those games. I don't think they're massively to fear. We've had a worse record against Leicester at home in recent seasons, so we've probably got more reason to fear Leicester. Arsenal will have a new manager, a lot of new signings. They might not have got up to full speed yet, although that's a month in, so that might be critical. Man City's a freebie. Chelsea are going to have a new manager as well. And as I said, Spurs are going to be fatigued, I think. I think we'll beat Cardiff. I really do. It's not like a Huddersfield who are having their first ever Premier League home game. It's Cardiff who've been up and down, who are going to be spending big and hope that things come together. I think Rafa Benitez is a better manager. I'm quite optimistic about that. It looks scary, but let's have no fear. We've got Rafa Benitez.
Almost as important as the teams you play, the luck you get with injuries. So last season, we ended the first game with no Dummett for 6 months nearly. No Shelvey for a few games. And then his form falling off a cliff and coming out of the team. And no Lejeune for 6 weeks and then coming back clearly unfit and undercooked. So I'd rather those things didn't happen than worry about who we play, because if those three things were to happen again, we'd be fucked, I'd just say it. Like, we would be, if those three players dropped out the team in the first game of the season, we would, or four players even.
Yeah.
Oh no, sorry, the Cells didn't get injured. Ignore that one. Yeah,
well, it's all about, you know, it's all about getting the momentum, getting the team gelled rather than who we play, because we got good results against good teams. Mm-hmm. It shouldn't matter. It's all, like you say, it's all about that cohesion.
In one aspect, it's exciting because if we do get good results in those games, can you imagine how fucking nuts the place will go? If we're like seventh after that first month, having played the teams we've played with arguably easier fixtures to come. I totally agree with what you say. In the Premier League, it's never that easy. But
it's like a confidence multiplier, isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
And I think you were right, Adam, with what you said earlier, that Spurs game is a great opportunity to get off to a good start. And if we get off to a good start against Spurs, I can't see we're losing to Cardiff. And then, you know, you'd go into Chelsea at home after that, and it's almost like we'll win this. We're probably top of the league. So I'm getting ahead of myself.
I'm looking forward to Jose Perez out-muscling Jan Vertonghen again. That's going to be a real highlight. Get the GIF makers ready.
One final change to finish off. This season, unlike previous seasons, there are three Premier League games. Four Premier League games before the international break. Traditionally, it's three. Last season, it was Spurs, West Ham, and Huddersfield break. Then we had Swansea after that. This season, you've got kind of five games before the international break, so you kind of get a little bit of a better feel before that two-week break. So I think that's really positive because it did your head in last year, beating West Ham, and then having to wait 2 weeks again to play on the Sunday at Swansea. So that's about it. Rob and Adam, thank you so much for your time tonight.
Thanks very much.
I hope it's been all right. First free podcast of the 18-19 season. I'll get used to it eventually. We'll have various free podcasts as pre-season continues. Every time we sign a player, we'll have instant reaction and journalist reaction on Patreon. We've had a fantastic chat with the BBC and ESPN's Asian football correspondent for the signing of Key. We've got all that on Patreon. At least 4 podcasts a week for a fiver, so it's like 16 podcasts a month for a fiver. Sign up. If you don't like it, you can always cancel. But we're confident you will. So thanks very much for listening. One final thing you can do for the podcast, if you like what we do, give us a 5-star review on iTunes or Facebook. That would be better. Cheers.